Good to have you here on this Monday, Kevin, BJ, and Ben. Glad to have you here all across Three and Out of the Southern Pigskin Radio Network. I mean, not much to talk about today, quite frankly. Just kidding. I mean, there's everything to talk about as we lead you up to Braves and Mets, a doubleheader today where they're going to see DeGrom for the first time this year coming up later tonight. So this afternoon, actually, in game one of the doubleheaders, we lead you up to that. You have the Atlanta Hawks. Yes, the Atlanta Hawks into the NBA Finals for the first time in 6 years. And I think just the fourth time since they've moved to Atlanta in the NBA Finals. Or the Eastern Conference Finals, excuse me. Not the NBA, the Conference Finals. And then you have this landmark Supreme Court decision that took place today regarding collegiate athletes, and I will say it in quotation marks because that's how the story put it, amateurism, end quote. So we have got so much to get to, and a lot of people saying, like, the college sports you knew 5 years ago even are probably readying to not be the same. So we'll get to that coming up in 10 minutes. Hit us up on Twitter, at Pigskin Radio, at Pigskin Radio. We are streaming live, ESPNCoastal.com. Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. You can catch us as well, and we'd love to hear from you. But, fellas, let's start with the Hawks last night. Hawks get it done in a Game 7 on the road, going to the conference finals. Unbelievable. And I saw a tweet today. I'm trying to remember who did it so I don't take credit for this, but they basically tweeted out, the Hawks have been to the Eastern Conference Finals, tore it all down, started over, and are now back in the Eastern Conference Finals in the same amount of time as the process was to be trusted. So there you go, Ben and BJ, after the Game 7 win last night. And we're having problems with BJ's mic right now. Go ahead, Ben.
No, I was going to say, Kevin, I mean, I was happy at the fact that the Hawks were able to go out there and make it happen even in an ugly game. I mean, I kept saying that the only way that the Hawks are going to even have a chance is if Trae Young played well. Well, he did not play well. And I think that gives you confidence, Kevin, if you think about the fact if my best player doesn't have to play well and we still have a chance to go out there and, you know, and get a win. But, I mean, I don't know why we keep on making it about – we don't make it about everything other than the Hawks. The national media does. It's, oh, Joel Embiid with the turnovers, which he did. I think he had 8, I think, in the fourth quarter. Ben Simmons still can't shoot. Ben Simmons, I think, went 0-for in the entire playoffs in the fourth quarter. Now it's Candace, because after the game, it's Doc Rivers can't make it back to a conference finals. The team he left is in the Western Conference Finals. You look at a guy in Joel Embiid who's a MVP candidate, Ben Simmons, who's supposed to be has this tremendous upside, yet these Nate McMillan interim head coach led Hawks told him, boys, let's get it. And I will say this, when you can shoot free throws, which the Hawks can, they got a big win. It was very, very impressive last night because we get caught up in how it looks, not that it got done, and the Hawks got it done. Trae Young, dare I say, Kevin, while everybody else is talking about who's going to be one of the new faces or the next faces of the NBA, I mean, Devin Booker's in the West. I think Trae Young got a shot to be one of those faces in the East.
Certainly playing like it. And, BJ, you watch a game unfold, and there were certain, I guess, indicators that you saw that you felt like the Hawks were in good shape. Right, it's Game 7. Trae Young at halftime was, what, like 1-for-11. It was just awful. 1-for-11. But guess what? The Hawks were right there. They didn't get put away in the first half. Hawks opened up the fourth quarter 0-for-8. And the 76ers could not pull away, could not put the Hawks to bed. So you had some significant outliers that had not happened much of the series. Trae Young's cold shooting, just an awful start to start the fourth quarter on the road, mind you, and you couldn't put the Hawks away. You felt like, obviously, the Hawks aren't going to go 0 for the quarter shooting the basketball. So they survived an 0-8, just ice-cold start in crunch time when it matters, and the 76ers had no reaction. Hawks were there to take advantage, BJ.
Just amazed by the composure of the team. You know, when you think about being in various circumstances and think about the whole playoffs, guys, right? New York, everybody talking about the Knicks. You find a way with Trae's shot late in game one. You close out New York in Madison Square Garden. You know, one of the most, incredible venues, storied venues in the world. And then you're talking about playing a Philadelphia team that has superstars that everybody is just kind of penciled in to the Eastern Conference Finals. And think about the success you had against the 76ers in Philly on the road. I mean, just remarkable. And to your point, you knew when Atlanta had kind of the modest lead at halftime and in the third quarter that Philadelphia was going to have a counter, right? Basketball is a game of runs. You knew the 76ers were gonna come and we're going to take a, you know, 3-4-5 point lead at least at some point. And even with Trae Young not being himself offensively, you still found a way. John Collins, Kevin Huerter, and then down the stretch, Trae Young, incredible once again. And Ben, I'm glad you mentioned it. The free throw line, just knocking them down at the free throw line. But the poise of this team, the maturity, kind of the steady way they play, the consistency when the pressure is there and when it's tense, it's hard to watch. They look like they're just playing. And it's an amazing attitude to have. This is an incredible team, and their poise through this postseason has been truly special.
Yeah, and now, of all things, you set up an Eastern Conference final against who? The Bucks and, oh yeah, the guy that used to be your head coach, Mike Budenholzer, who has got the Milwaukee Bucks playing really, really well. So a reunion of sorts for the Hawks and Coach Bud. And now you look at this matchup, guys. How do you think, first and foremost, the Hawks match up with Giannis, who is going to obviously draw a lot of the headlines in this series?
Ooh, how do they match up with Giannis? Wow. I think that because they've seen a guy like Joel Embiid, when you talk about a skill set, because Joel Embiid is more the guy that can shoot the threes, a bigger body, whereas when you look at a guy like Giannis, he's going to BJ. I mean, he's long. I don't think you got to worry about him. You know, don't get him to the free throw line. I mean, he gonna add 10 more minutes to the game as long as he sit there at the free throw line. But I think if you are a young Hawks team, I think BJ, something you said, I think they match up better with Milwaukee. I didn't think they match up as well against Brooklyn. You got a guy, PJ Tucker, who's going to frustrate a guy like Trae Young. Even if he can't stay in front of him, he's going to frustrate him and make him work for every shot. But I think if you look at this matchup top to bottom, you shouldn't be afraid of the Bucks. I mean, they should make you a little nervous, but you shouldn't be afraid of them, because it's not like Atlanta played two slouches to get here. The Knicks are a much better team. Obviously, Philly was the favorite. I think when you look at what Atlanta brings to the table, they can shoot free throws. They don't play hesitant type basketball. And BJ, dare I say, Trae Young cannot have a good game, and them role players, they are stepping up, because they're gonna rebound the football, they're gonna rebound the basketball, they're gonna be able to get to the free throw line, they're gonna force you into some bad shots late. And if Atlanta got the lead late, outside of maybe that first series, they've shown that they can keep those leads. It was brilliant to watch them down the stretch. It's not gonna be an easy, you know, series with the Bucks, but I think it's more favorable. And if they would have, I'd rather have Giannis than freaking KD.
Yeah, and defensively, in terms of stopping Giannis, I don't really know if that's plausible or if that's realistic. I mean, I think you have size and length. You know, you think about Clint Capella. He's a guy that can alter a lot of shots. But Giannis is Giannis. He's such a matchup problem. Kevin, I know you said during the Philadelphia series, man, hey, not let Embiid do what he wants, but you focus kind of your game plan against stopping the other guys. And you saw Atlanta really do a nice job against Ben Simmons, against, you know, some of the other role players for Philadelphia, Tobias Harris, for the most part. If you're Atlanta, might the key to the series actually be slowing down Chris Middleton? I mean, I know Giannis is a superstar and everybody knows him and knows what he can do. But then Chris Middleton's had some big time shots. He's a big time swing player. I think how you defend him might in some ways help decide the series.
I mean, that sounds good, BJ. I mean, these game plans that we're giving out are very, very easy when we're talking about what they have to do. But give this young Hawks team this much credit. No one, Kevin, BJ, no one expected. They supposed to have been home watching with us, right? Let's not act like, oh, of course we saw the Hawks being in the Eastern Conference Finals playing Milwaukee. But I think that's what makes them dangerous. They should have swept the Knicks. They went to Game 7, and Game 7, you see how much more pressure it puts on the favorite? I just think that for this Hawks team, they got to win game one, though, because that swings the momentum. And, Kevin, you're always talking about, you know, momentum swinging. We're talking about the basketball and sports in general. Trae Young, I hope to God he's played his worst game we saw last night. He was not hitting from the three at all, but I just think it's a favorable matchup, because I think Nate McMillan is still the one coach not being talked about, his ability to adjust, to go in at halftime being down any time in this series and in the previous series and to win it. Give that Hawks team a lot of credit, because, like I say, I think their role players, you know, do a better job than the role players that of the Bucks.
Yeah, look, man, I think the Hawks going into this, you're again playing with house money against a good team in Milwaukee, but certainly not one that the experts thought. There are a lot of folks that never thought that the Bucks would get past the Nets to get to this point. And I know Virgil weighs in on Facebook saying the Bucks are one of the worst teams in the league at defending the three. And good, the Hawks shoot the three really well. I think you saw that game plan that we talked about. Look, let Embiid do his thing. How many games did we come back and say, Joel Embiid and Seth Curry were about the only ones that did anything in the fourth quarter? Well, what does that tell you? The Hawks were letting Embiid kind of make his own mistakes, shoot some bad shots, but they weren't going to let everybody else beat them, and they didn't. I think the Hawks, did they win, what, a couple of games there in Philadelphia as well? So you were able to go on the road and take it to a 76ers team in their crib and get it done. Now you're on to the Eastern Conference Finals. And now, again, we talked about this last week. I went to the stat sheet. We talked about playing with house money in that series against the 76ers. I mean, you are playing with the house and some of your neighbors' money in this series because, again, the Hawks, to my count, unless I, again, didn't read it right, have been in the Eastern Conference Finals three times since they've moved to Atlanta in 1968 and have won exactly one game in those Eastern Conference Finals. So, I mean, anything you do from this point forward in terms of positivity, a dub, two dubs, you are sitting in some unprecedented waters here with the Hawks and just go out and play with a lot of confidence, even with Giannis on the other side. I think you might argue you have the better team chemistry going right now of the two teams here in the playoffs.
Well, and I think this is a team that is captivating the country. You know, Ben, you've talked about this for a few weeks now, that maybe people knew about Trae Young, or that's the guy from Oklahoma who shoots the long threes. But now you're seeing he's got the best floater in the NBA. His ball handling is extraordinary. He is a guy that wants the ball late. He is clutch. He is cool. He is composed. You're learning about the role players. You know, social media talking about Kevin Huerter. They're calling him Red Velvet. He's got 27. You think about John Collins, who people know. Clint Capella, people knew about him in Houston, but now you're seeing the full impact of his game. You think about Gallinari. He's a veteran. He's been around the league, but now he's playing leading role type moments, scoring what, 18, 20, 22 in big-time playoff games. You think about Lou Will, you know, what he brings off the bench. You think about the depth, the balance. And I know the question, and understandably so, Giannis is one of the best players on earth, is how will the Hawks match up with Giannis? But I think to Virgil's point, who shared the comment on Facebook, how does Milwaukee match up with Atlanta? When you think about a dynamic, penetrating score or kick point guard in Trey, you think about 3, 4, 5 shooters. And keep in mind, not only shooters, but big guys who can shoot. Gallinari, 6'9", he can shoot from three. John Collins can shoot from three. You're talking about length. You're talking about floor spacing. You're talking about guys who have a mid-range. I don't know how Milwaukee matches up with this Atlanta Hawks team and what they bring to the floor offensively.
Whatever Giannis does, he's not going to score enough points to beat you. You're not going to stop him. I think with him, you force him to the free throw line in pressure situations to give you a better shot. I just think that when you look at the team, you look at the four teams left. I mean, you know, when you look at the Clippers, obviously they got PG-13 if Kawhi can play, but they lost last night to Devin Booker and CP3 and those guys. I know that Giannis is a back-to-back MVP. Giannis is nervous because Giannis has never got over the hump. Can Atlanta? Atlanta was not a better team than both teams they just beat. They were not a better team than Philly. They weren't a better team than I think the Knickerbockers. They had the better chemistry. Chemistry matters. Giannis is Giannis. I mean, and I know Virgil was saying, if Trey learns to protect the ball, he will become a super. No, he is a superstar because I think he became a superstar in the first series. He proved that the lights are not too bright in this second series. And if he can beat Milwaukee. I want to say if the Hawks can beat Milwaukee, I mean,
it's obvious he's kind of the contributing factor to that because as he goes, the Hawks seem to go. When he struggles, the Hawks have kind of struggled. When he has a great, even if it's just assists,
yes,
the Hawks do much better in that scenario. So I think he is clearly the leader and kind of the momentum centrifuge, if you will, of this team.
If Kevin, you hear a name and you hear a team and you get a name. If I say BJ, if I say Phoenix, you're gonna say Devin Booker, or you're gonna say, you know, CP3. If I say the Clippers, you're gonna say Kawhi, PG-13. If I say Milwaukee, you're gonna say Giannis. If I say Atlanta, you're gonna say Trey. I'm sorry. He's already a one name superstar, and it's not like he just got here. So I know it's all about the up and comers and everybody not named Trey Young. How many of those teams still playing? Okay, they watching Trey do what he does. You don't got to like his haircut. You can like his game. That man didn't have a good game. They still won. Forever, I love Atlanta. Get with it or get lost.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this thing plays out. But coming up on Wednesday, game one of the Eastern Conference Finals, and BJ's had a lot of moments of disbelief. This might be another one. The Atlanta Hawks are in the Eastern Conference Finals. Say it aloud for those who didn't hear you the first time when it was all said and done. We got so much to get. I mean, just – any and everything is happening today here around the state. You got the Hawks into the Eastern Conference Finals. You got the Braves and Mets in a crucial four-game series with a doubleheader coming up today. Jacob DeGrom against Kyle Muller. God bless you, Kyle. You may have to go out there and pitch as great as you've ever pitched in your life in that first seven-inning game to try to get a dub. But that coming up. And, oh, by the way, the Supreme Court is weighing in on college athletes and not about name, image, likeness. About even more. And we will get to that and tell you exactly what the Supreme Court put out there today. When we come back, it's 3 and Out on the Southern Pigskin Radio Network. Great to be here on this Monday. So much happening across just all fronts here. The Hawks into the Eastern Conference Finals. You've got Braves and Mets versus DeGrom today in game one of another doubleheader. So the Braves are playing four games in a span of 2 days here as well. And we all know name, image, likeness is coming up next week. Next week in the state of Georgia, we'll get to July 1st. The NCAA is planning to pass some minimalist measures, basically saying if you got laws on the books, you're good. And if you don't, here's some minimum guidelines you potentially have to beat. But BJ, none of that, I think, even holds a candle to what the Supreme Court had to say today. And who even had an idea that the Supreme Court was about to weigh in? That kind of came out and it was like, wait, the Supreme Court all of a sudden has a weigh in about quote unquote amateurism. And a lot of people talking about now the future of the NCAA after today's decision, which was passed, legislated 9-0 by the Supreme Court. So everybody's on the same page Supreme Court wise with this. Regarding the NCAA and college athletes.
Yeah, and basically a review of kind of the business model in theory and you know, it potentially being wrong or antiquated or needing adjustment in terms of student athletes and what they're able to receive, what they get as a part of their, if you want to call it a benefits package or a part of their scholarship. And, you know, you're at a really interesting crossroads with college athletics. And you are right. This is separate from name, image, likeness. And I think, you know, it's hard to kind of keep track of all of it. The name, image, likeness stuff, I think the kind of the minimalist measure, like you said, may just sort of be the kind of the vague starting point where we still have way more questions than answers. But I think with this, Ben, potentially you're talking about kind of a recalibration or a second look and sort of a major overhaul moving forward, potentially to kind of the dynamic of the student athlete profile within the NCAA and kind of what you're able to get, what you're allowed, if not encouraged to receive as a part of what you do and what you bring to the university, what you bring to the athletics department. You know, the business model of the NCAA has been something that people have talked about for years in terms of, hey, you know, what are the parallels kind of outside of college athletics to this? Or, you know, what is the next evolution? And that's something I've been asking for a while. I don't think that when you talk about name, image, likeness, and I've said this before, and obviously you have a great perspective on it, but I don't think that name, image, likeness is kind of the end all be all for this change in amateurism. I think it's a very small part. I think it's going to be a leading part, yes, because it's one of the developments in the forefront of where we are with this change, right, Kevin? But I think potentially you're looking at a change in the infrastructure, a potential foundational change. And much like with name, image, likeness a couple of months ago, or even longer ago than that, we're in a point where we still have more questions than answers. It's hard to speak with great conviction and say, I know that the student athlete in a year will have this, or I know that the NCAA will have to make this change. But it feels like, as today's, you know, ruling obviously indicates, and kind of the information we're getting from people who cover this stuff, this is pretty significant. And you're talking about just another evolution, another progression, another step in changing amateurism and sort of the theme, I guess, of sort of the NCAA's the way they operate.
So for folks that maybe don't know what we're talking about, the Supreme Court put out an opinion today. 9-0. Normally you have a majority opinion and a dissenting opinion. Today you had a majority opinion and a concurring opinion that was written by the court in regards to this. So obviously name, image, likeness has already been, like, that's out there. I think we all know what that entails. This is what this kind of came about. It said, the court says that the NCAA can no longer bar colleges from providing athletes with education-related benefits such as free laptops or paid postgraduate internships. So that, to me, is a big deal. I think if you are looking at it from a competitive imbalance, I think you took one step forward last week and two steps back this week, just my opinion, in terms of, hey, we want to have it where we're leveling the field. I think it's easy to say, well, we did that. We're allowing colleges to provide more. Well, who can provide more? Those that have more. I mean, that's just common sense. If you go to Alabama, Alabama will be able to provide you with more educational materials, or let me get the correct wording there. Education-related benefits, which seems kind of like murky language to me, but obviously they would be able to do more than, say, a school like maybe Rice would, simply because they have more ability to do stuff like that. So to me, you brought the gap closer and then pushed it back apart a little bit with this coming up today, because to me, education-related benefits, BJ, I can get a lot of creative ways to say what's education-related benefit and make it seem like it's in the name of education, where really it's like, hey, we're giving out laptops over here, and, well, we're Alabama. We can afford to give you a new one every single year. So just, well, they can't do that over there. Yeah, we know that. That's why we're doing it. So to me, this is going to be very interesting to see how murky that language becomes with education-related benefits. And just because if you let it kind of free flow, I think it benefits who it's always benefited, and that's the larger schools, Ben.
Yeah, you know it's going to benefit the larger schools, but that goes on now, right? Like, there are certain things that go on right now. But I will say, when you start pulling back the layers, like you, if you keep on pulling them back, because see, if you're an athlete, you didn't even know this existed. You're like, wait a minute, what do you mean? Like something you said, Kevin, like, we're going to give them all 70-inch screens. No, those are monitors.
Yeah, they're monitors to see their schoolwork.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It always comes – now, I will say this. BJ and Kevin, does this change the way, you know, athletics is going to be done in college? Yes. Does that mean certain schools are going to go the way? Like Kevin just mentioned Rice. Now
– well, Rice is private, so, I mean, yeah, I think they can –
What I'm saying is, it's, you know, the things they get at Vanderbilt are going to be different than what they get at Georgia, and they're in the same conference. So what I'm saying is, if at Rice, they say, hey, man, at, you know, Northwestern, they got MacBook Pros. Over here, we got Windows 7. So that's what but that's what we're doing, right? That's what, and I think that the one thing about college that people have to give it credit for, there is nothing, Alabama may have more of resources. There is nothing they don't, but they got access to the same, it ain't the exact same thing, but the language, they know the language. That's why you got commissioners and chancellors and what may have you. But if I'm a student first, right? They always talking about the educational side. That's what it is. I'm like, wait a minute. Before they even make money off their name and image likeness, we're gonna be able to give them benefits through what they do, you know, academically. So I think that's a great thing, because that makes it so that more athletes get benefits of stuff. It's not gonna be it's never the same. I mean that's the difference. And why do you drive a certain car brand another one? The price. I mean, I like those, but those come with certain prices. When you think about this, that's kind of what this is. You're going, the elite are going to always be the elite. So the elites, the elite conferences, the elite teams, they already know, okay. Now, if you're Alabama, you're thinking, good Lord, can we just get them a, you know, a 2017? Nope. It's got to be the 2021 iMac Pro 16-inch. But at the same time, now you got to start looking across the board and start saying, all right, how do we make this work across the board? I know that don't, I know, BJ, that's what we would want to be. I want, but like something Kevin say too, I'm sorry, people. These colleges don't care about other colleges. Like they don't care about them one bit. Now the perception looks good, right? Because Alabama go play Rice, but they gonna, but what is $1 million to Alabama to get it in? And it'll and then Rice might not even use that for the athletic department. That might go to the science department because you know they need those checks. So I do think it's gonna change the way. And this is just the day. They gonna keep pulling back some more layers because I believe the Supreme Court started looking at the stuff, Kevin and BJ, and they said, wait a minute, they making how much money? So what the players get? I know they got to get. Oh, they get a scholarship, man, and some of them get a chance to be in the college football playoff, or they go to the NCAA tournament. Wait, what? They get to keep playing? Yeah, they get to play a little longer.
Well, I mean, look, I just think this will go along the ways of, you know, potentially unintended consequences. Like, it's good. I think, like, hey, hook them up. You know, do what you got to do. I just think we look at it, and the general premise is, hey, all these colleges are making all this money. And I think they are making a lot of money, but I think they're also spending a lot of it before they get it. I just read a story last week. I forget who it was, college somewhere. It's like, hey, we're building a new whatever thanks to a $15 million donation. Well, somebody didn't just walk up and hand them a stack of 15 mil. No, that's 15 million total over the next 15 years, and they're going to get that to go ahead and build the building now. So they have the money coming in, but it's already spent. I think you're seeing that across colleges where you say, well, Georgia makes money out. Yes, they do. But what about the teams that are trying to play catch-up facilities-wise so that they can recruit those student-athletes? Are they as financially solvent as those? I don't know. I think that's, to me, where it's going to get different. And to me, it kind of falls down when – I don't want to get off on a tangent, but kind of like, hey, the minimum wage debate, $15 an hour, where I think a lot of business is like, fine, okay, we probably should pay people some more money. And we're willing to do that. We're just not going to pay everybody that. So what we're going to do, we're going to cut it in half, and we're going to pay the guys we have left – the new wage. And I think you could see that at a lot of institutions, maybe not the P5 level, BJ and Ben, but certainly lower level G5 down to FCS level type competition where it's like, look, Alabama's giving out paid laptops to all their student athletes. You say, well, what's that? I mean, well, just count. I think Georgia puts out like 25, 26, 27 sports or more. So that's, it's not like, hey, it's just for the football guys. Like, no, they're saying they're probably going to give it to everybody. How many schools down the road are going to be willing or financially able to just say, in order for us to keep up, we're going to do that too? I think it might have the other way where it say, look, in order for us to do that and compete with the football and basketball side of things, we're going to have to pare back some of this other stuff and maybe just get rid of it so that we don't put ourselves in more of a financial bind trying to keep up with the Joneses on the extra benefits level. And to me, that's where it could get out of control, because I do think there's an aspect of athletics, BJ, where it is kind of still amateurism, where like 99% or more of the guys at level X, like that's it. You are there playing because it's an opportunity, probably getting some scholarship money, and that's it. I don't know that the school is sitting there just banking billions of dollars off of a D2 basketball program or anything like that.
Well, I think, you know, Ben, you used the word layers when you were talking about there are layers to this. And I think that's true when you look at what happened today. And this is the opening paragraph from Dan Murphy of ESPN.com. His story's at the top of the headline section. He says that this quote provides for an incremental increase in how college athletes can be compensated and also opens the door for future legal challenges. And I think that's where you kind of look at this as a multifaceted thing. Yes, it opens the door for compensation, and you know, we'll have to see how that kind of plays itself out, or you know, we'll have to see what the viability of that is moving forward. But I also think this could potentially be used to, you know, challenge other aspects of sort of the traditional student athlete profile or the NCAA or you know, elements like that. I think for as much as we kind of want to get a feel for this, right, whether it's national name, image, likeness, I should say, or this, and we kind of want to try to tie it up and say, okay, I know what this is. I have it right here. I think there are elements that are unknown right now, and I think this is going to be a very fluid situation moving forward. But Kevin, what I'm getting at is to kind of wrap it all up, I think you're going to see a transformation of amateurism on many fronts.
Well, here's just some of the things. Again, education related opportunities or education related benefits. People thought in that statement it was, hey, cash options for academic success. This is from Dan Murphy, ESPN on Twitter. That means something as simple as showing up to class every day could get you an extra $5,000 if your school decides it wants to make sure its athletes get access to more benefits. So going to class could get you paid, essentially. I don't know how many schools can do that, just for something as simple as that. Alabama probably could. Georgia probably could. I don't think – so then the competitive imbalance, I think, just widens again. So to me, that's the kind of stuff that I think you don't know. Like in his – tweet thread, Dan Murphy's like, hey, a lot of schools waited specifically today to see what the Supreme Court said before doing it because it was potentially out there already. But I mean, $5,000 just for that's to me sounds like just because, right? I mean, it's $5,000 for $5,000 because I mean, going to class, that's just showing up, right? Like I might show up somewhere if you're going to give me $5,000 just for showing up. So I think that's where, to me, you could see a lot of really changing the balance of amateurism, which is, you know, it's fine. But how many schools can do that is, I guess, the flip side of that coin. Because I think there's a perception that there's 123 D1 schools that play football. There's over 300 that play D1 sports. How many of those can pay $5,000 times 1,000? Just because.
I mean,
maybe they can. I'm just saying I don't think there's that many unless they start scaling back on some of the other things like facilities and things like that that also attract athletes and say, hey, your weight room's not going to be as nice, but you'll get $3,000.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe your athletes only building kind of stinks. It's not as cool as other ones, but we'll give you $3,000 for showing up to class. I mean, that's the only way I can think it just kind of balances itself out as you cut back on some of the arms race, so to speak, in recruiting, and it's just straight, look, our facilities aren't good, but we'll pay you.
Yeah, but the thing about it is, too, when you start talking about what usually the consumer dictates the market, when you're talking about, prices or what may have you, these colleges decide what they do. So when somebody says, when Georgia spends $2 million in recruiting, that's what they decided to do. They didn't have to do that. That's what they decided to do because they know that's going to be in the paper. Man, do you see how much money they put in recruiting? So, and that way, when you get into the desired result, I think Kevin, you do make a point if you're going to get, but okay, if I go to school X and I get $200 for going to class, well, I used to get nothing. So, I mean, and I can't really worry about what they're getting at another school. I don't go to that school. It's always an unfair balance. I mean, unfair
competitive balance. My point is, if I'm being recruited by two schools, and again, this is just simple recruiting, and one school is going to give me $3,000 and one school is going to give me $200, I mean –
you better sign that.
That's not a decision for a lot of people.
I'm
not saying somebody's not going to take it, but I'm just saying that's just to me that's not much of a decision at that point.
Yeah, it's not going to be. I don't think it's going to be as bad as people think it is because you would be very very surprised if I go to a D2 school and my friend goes to a D1 school. I'm sorry, I don't expect to get what he gets. I mean, I don't like it, but I don't expect to get what they get. I mean, Auburn players might not get what Alabama players get. They in the same state, in the same division, in the same conference. I just think that if you went from nothing to something, that's almost student athletes really care about. It's never ever going to be balanced. I mean, Nick Saban gets a raise every time a coach in the SEC gets one. So if a coach in the SEC gets a raise, he'll get one. That's built in. But I do think that the Supreme Court is showing that amateurism is a myth. You cannot call this thing amateurism. Forget the fact we ain't even talking about name and image later. That was last week. This week, y'all could have been giving them benefits because of academics, and you weren't even giving them that. I just think that the more we keep pulling back the layers with this thing, we're going to be like, dude, because like you said, Kevin, you're right. I mean, are student athletes the only, quote, ambassadors at the school getting, getting exploited? No. If you go to medical school, they exploit you too. I mean, I had to do a 4-year internship for research, and what did I get? Experience. And they use my research to go, you know, decide another. Everybody's getting it. I think this paves the way for students more than student athletes, because if athletes can benefit academically, I mean, students got to start. So pretty soon, they're like, hey, man, maybe I can make some of this money back. Sally Mae, I'm coming for you, because good Lord, she definitely gonna find you.
We got to step aside. There's so much that we could unravel with this because, again, who knows how it's going to play itself out. And I think it starts out small, and then once people see what the playing field is, it can really explode out there into a number of different ways. We'll continue to talk about this as it develops over the coming days and weeks as well. We'll come back, get you ready for Braves and Mets from New York. A doubleheader today, starting off a 4-game series. It's 3 and Out on the Southern Pigskin Radio Network. It's 3 and Out all across the Southern Pigskin Radio Network. Kevin, BJ, and Ben getting you ready for Braves and Mets. Doubleheader today. It is DeGrom against Kyle Muller in game number one. And the Braves, as you look at it, Kevin Smith catching, Kyle Muller going against DeGrom. I think maybe you're hoping for game number two to go a little better your way and saying, go get him, Kyle Muller, if we happen to come out on top. All the better, but maybe in this 4 games in 2 days stretch, not throwing all your big eggs in the DeGrom basket today.
Well, no, right, like Ian Anderson set to go tonight. I mean, if we're just going off of the success of a kind of record and ERA indication, you have a much better chance to win tonight and kind of maximize an Ian Anderson start, so to speak, when you're not facing Jacob DeGrom. I mean, if you're Ian Anderson and you're going up against Jacob DeGrom and you get, or Kyle Muller, whoever, and you give up one run, I mean, that's uh-oh time. Looking at what DeGrom has done. So I think that's probably the smart play. If that's the perspective, I think Ian Anderson's got a great chance to get a dub tonight. I don't know that the Mets have announced their starter, but yeah, when you're facing DeGrom, man, wow, just go out there and give it your best, and we'll see.
Kyle, just do your best, man. I mean, nobody's expecting them. They're talking to Kyle as if they're going to the bullpen. Listen, just do your best. Just get it over with. But Kevin, once again, I know it's all about DeGrom. If Kyle can go out there and make a game of this thing, what does that do for his confidence?
Oh, you didn't hear that?
Not expecting that.
Kevin said if the Braves beat DeGrom, he's buying all of us lunch tomorrow.
Is that what I said?
I heard.
I would say, I mean, listen, and outside of the Wainwright start, the Braves starting pitching has been pretty good the last handful of games. So we'll see. I mean, again, Kyle Muller's, his job is not to try to beat Jacob DeGrom. His job is to try to slow down the Mets offense, which when DeGrom pitches, hasn't been giving him all that much. So we shall see what the young kid can do. Like I said, go get him. Nothing to lose. But, BJ, as you said, I think vital you try to take 3 out of 4 in this series to claw some ground back, as each game gives you 2. So to speak, in the standings going the other direction. So big next couple of days, and you got 2 7-inning games today. We'll send you up to New York and get you ready for that right after this. We will see you tomorrow. It's 3 and Out all across the Southern Pigskin Radio Network, streaming live, ESPNCoastal.com. Hit us up on Twitter @PigskinRadio.